We've introduced him previously on the show as one of the world's foremost iPhone and iPad authorities. We had him on for the first time here about a year ago, episode 92 on the FDH Lounge. We spoke about his work at CodeFab and with the iPhone Boot Camp, which is where our senior producer Steve Cervillo first made his acquaintance, having gone through the iPhone Boot Camp. And an excellent guy to talk to about technology. We talked to him last year a little bit before, I believe it was a little bit before the release of the first iPads, and coincidentally, there's news leaking out today. I think Daily Beast had a link up about iPad 2 could be on its way out with some different changes here. So regardless of the truth of that or the timetable of that or anything else, this is always a good guy to talk to if you want to know cutting-edge technology. Alex Cohn from CodeFab. Great pleasure to have you back on, Alex. Appreciate you being able to come on a few minutes early. How are you tonight, sir?
No problem at all. Good to come back on. How are you guys doing this evening?
Oh, we're doing fine. How are you doing, Alex?
Absolutely great. Good nice day out today. Good to get some sunshine.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's great. If you're in a corner of the country where you can do that, God bless you. coming from our Sports Talk Network headquarters city at Cleveland, that certainly is not possible, but... God bless you if you're in an area where you can do that. When we talked to you last on the show almost a year ago, I think that was right before the iPads came out. We were talking a little bit about that at the time. We were previewing that a little bit. I mean, when it came out, did it meet your expectations as far as, first and foremost, what it was already pre-programmed to do, and then again, what you could unlock it to do further?
Well, yeah, I think... So I was prepared to say that, you know, this was a particular market segment that, you know, but it wasn't my market segment. You know, I was a happy laptop-toting person with, you know, desktop computers in various places. And so I thought, you know, what need is an iPhone attached to my body? Like, what need is a pad going to be? But actually, despite all that, you know, I've come to really love my iPad. And, you know, it has, you know, some quirks in terms of, you know, design, but it's turned out to be a great device, and I've been really excited to spend most of the time since we spoke working on, you know, three great products for the iPad that have that came out for one of our clients. We did the Barnes & Noble Nook for the iPad, as well as the iPhone, and now the Kids Nook for the iPad. And so I spent a lot of time not just using the iPad, but, you know, hacking on it. But it's also been really sort of interesting because, you know, I was thrown really right into the maelstrom of this whole digital books, digital publishing, sort of the future of the way we consume this sort of digital media. And that was really sort of an interesting sort of thought problem to sort of work on how to create software to be an e-reader, and also what people really wanted and needed and what features they liked and didn't like and how people used it. And so I ended up reading lots and lots of books on it just to actually be using it, as well as doing lots of experimenting with magazines and newspapers and other things on the iPads. So sort of part of the Barnes & Noble universe. So it's, it's got a place to stay as far as a computing device and a platform. I think it'll be very interesting to see as it sort of evolves. But it may take a little bit, but Apple is going to continue sort of riffing on this thing and getting different form factors and different features in there over time to sort of define the device does. And it's an exciting time.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned about the e-readers and everything like that, because if we just look back at the chronology of this, I mean, I think that's where it all started, wasn't it, as far as e-readers, that these tablets were going to have books available. I think that's, you know, that was the core focus when you look at the Kindle and some of these first generation ones that were out here. And then you've since seen it evolve to many other different areas versus the iPad. Again, I'm just a layman on this stuff, looking at it from what I can see. But to me, just from a more primitive standpoint, what it appears is that they've really separated themselves by making it sort of the vogue multimedia thing of choice. I mean, obviously you can read books on it, but you can do so many other things. You can access the internet either through wireless connection or the 3G. You can do all these multimedia things. You can watch movies on it, etc. So is that where they've really succeeded in setting themselves apart with this whole sort of implicit thing of we're not a mere e-reader, we're something where you can do so many other different things?
Well, certainly that was an aspect of it, but I think that the iPad arrived like just in time to coincide with another sort of revolution that's coming with computing. I think the thing that happened was that basically we went from computing was something that, you know, took up a big something, at least a laptop, bigger computer, and was something that was relatively tethered, you know, plugged into the wall, you know, plugged into, you know, a Wi-Fi, but it wasn't really something you sort of took with you everywhere and used all the time. And, you know, that kind of computing sort of arrived first with the iPhone, and by the time the iPad came out, it ironed out a lot of issues as far as, you know, data networks and connectivity and, you know, ease of use. And so what the iPad really got was it got this idea that, you know, you could do most of your access of the internet, most of your computing, video, anything that you might do with the computer, you could do with this thing anywhere all the time. And it just turned out to be like the perfect display format for a wide variety of content. And a lot of people were sort of really sort of comfortable with this, and it works with, you know, things that, you know, you might do on a smartphone, but, you know, would be really sort of hurried and quick. Here you can spend more time. So, yes, better for watching movies and reading books, but also, you know, gameplay and, you know, actual, you know, doing actual work other than email. And so, well, it wasn't so much that the design of the device, and it was the fact that it was so connected to the internet and it was powerful enough to do all these things that used to be desktop or laptop tasks. And that really, you know, fed into all the hype and excitement, and that meant that, you know, it has really taken off and done a lot of things that I think people would not have believed that you would be able to do when it was, you know, first being, you know, suggested. I mean, I don't think, you know, just things like just casually, you know, dialing up a movie on Netflix and just starting it from, you know, an iPad while sitting in the living room and things like that. People, you know, even if they talked about, oh, you could watch videos on it, we're thinking, you know, just locally stored, and transferred it, you know, some effort. But the whole idea that you could just sort of browse, you know, Netflix, pick a movie and start playing, or Hulu, or, you know, the Xfinity app from Comcast that Cookfab had some part in building also.
Well, you know. You know, my next question, Alex, and I'll apologize preemptively. I mean, this is of a maybe more primitive nature here again, because not having really been exposed much to the iPad and not understanding some of the things that make it unique. In a certain sense, to me, it does seem like it's, while it is kind of a bridge between smartphones and laptops, it's still got a little bit of, you know, neither fish nor fowl as far as how they go. I'm wondering to what extent it has potential in future adaptations as we look ahead, and maybe not just a year or two from now, but a couple of years from now, maybe not just the iPad, but these tablets in general. I'm wondering about as far as being a more tangible link between the two. On the side with the laptops, you know, I'm somebody who I do a fair amount of work on spreadsheets. Is it something where in lieu of having a laptop to do stuff, might I be able to do something on there on an iPad, some actual computing type stuff? And then also with the phone, do you foresee a day when somebody might, you know, instead of having a smartphone, if they just want to have one device, maybe you have a Bluetooth that connects with the iPad, and maybe you do your dialing through the iPad? I mean, are there things coming in the future here where this may be a more tangible link between both sides?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, you go ahead and do spreadsheets now, because, you know, Apple's numbers works great on the iPad.
Okay.
It's really an amazing port. But I think the thing that's going to happen going forward isn't that the iPad's going to evolve, you know, just, you know, something. What's going to happen is, I think, is that you're going to see sort of a convergence. You're going to carry around with you a lot, you know, what, it, not even a smartphone or an iPad. You're going to carry on a certain chunk of computing resources and storage and connectivity and memory that is a lot more than you've got right now, and you'll just carry it around with you in something that's smaller than an iPhone or anything else like that, and it will sort of power all of these things. You know, your iPad will basically be a peripheral for that. It's like you get in the car now with a Bluetooth phone. The music that you're carrying with you and, the database of all the songs on it and playlists and everything else like that integrates with the car smoothly. You do a little pairing with the Bluetooth, sometimes now completely automatically, and go ahead and use it. You're not really aware of the facts of whether there's one computer or two computers or one repository of music or two repositories of music. The whole concept of, where's that document? Is it on my laptop? Is it on my iPod or my iPad? Or is it going to be on my desktop computer? It's going to sort of, fade away. They'll all communicate easily with each other. And, so I think what you're going to see is that, you're going to have five times the computing power that you have in an iMac, in your iPad. And the iPad will have possibly changed in form factor or be transparent or roll up and stick in your pocket. But the sort of the march forward of, access to multimedia, access to the internet and data, and access to all of your information and all of your communications, that will sort of be consistent as the form factor changes and will sort of grow.
I think the word you used put your finger on it better than I did, the word convergence. I guess that's what I was kind of getting at because, again, as I've said, I don't have an iPad, don't have an iPhone. I'll tell you what, I'm counting down the days to the end of my cell contract and getting rid of my cheapo one here and actually getting a smartphone and actually joining the 21st century in that regard. But I got to think for folks who have both an iPhone and an iPad or some type of smartphone and some type of tablet that they might consider that to be a duplicative in a lot of ways. As you said, do I have these files here or there? Is my music here or there? And ultimately, at the end of the day, what do I need both of these for? I guess that's what I was kind of getting at with my question. But you do seem to be envisioning a day when that convergence comes and this duplicative nature kind of, maybe that's just a transitional phase in this whole thing, huh?
Yeah. I mean, the form factor of like an iPad or something like that, it's great for certain things. When you're sitting on the couch, when you're, tell you what, if you maybe a slightly more waterproof version, take it down to the beach to read a book or whatever else like that. Places where setting up a laptop currently, wouldn't be completely feasible, and someplace I can plug in, blah blah blah. This is more like an iPod for your music versus listening to your tunes through iTunes on your laptop. It's a good take some stuff with you and carry it away kind of thing. You sit in more sort of casual environments. But it's also interesting in that the new MacBook Airs are clearly an evolution of the architecture in the iPad. They're just solid state, and the solid state is attached to the processing power in a way that is much more like the iPad than it is like any laptop Apple's built before. And so the whole sort of computing platform is transforming itself and pulling pieces from all these different things. And I think you may end up not having laptops anymore. And, and sort of conceptually, sort of like right now, if you've got, Gmail or something like that, it doesn't really matter where you are. You can access all of that mail, any documents, any other stuff like that. And so you don't even think about whether you can get to it so long as there's some sort of internet connectivity. And with something along the lines of, thinking you can make sure that even if there isn't any, you have a local repository of stuff that you're working on. I think that in the very near term, Apple's going to do some stuff to make this, faster and more powerful and have, features like cameras and better connectivity to certain things. But I think, over time, the whole concept of, something that is a separate device for your phone versus a separate device for reading your books may go away.
Very interesting. I'm wondering if any of this ties in potentially. I mean, it sounds like on the surface maybe it does as far as where everything's going. I don't know if you've ever seen it. If I've seen it, you probably have. I don't remember if it was in an email that I'd gotten or whatever, but a slideshow of some of this experimental work that some of the Japanese companies are working on of where laptops of the future are expected to be more so almost like a projection type thing here, that you'll have a piece of hardware, but rather than have a screen. It'll maybe just project it onto something external. Does that seem to be where this is all going here, where, as you say, you'd have something that would power your music and everything like that, but where essentially the notion of a screen itself may or may not even be part of this in the future?
Yeah, you probably just have some, you know, nice heads-up display, and the window will just be right out there, you know, where it would be if there was a computer there, but without the computer. You know, maybe you get Bluetooth contact lenses, or it's a, you know, it's a, you know, it's a common add-on to a pair of glasses, or something. You know, and so that, you know, you're not really even aware of it any more than you're aware of the fact that the actual computing is going on with something the size of a sugar cube that's in your pocket. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is the, you know, this is an interesting point, just because the sort of the nature of how we interact with these computers is changing. The whole. I mean, you're sort of not having a smartphone, and, you know, and not having something like an iPad means you sort of miss the start of this sort of changeover. It's a thing that really changes your habits of interacting with computers. You know, I actually do mail from my desktop about maybe a quarter of what I used to. You get lots of stuff done with your phone or your iPad or whatever, you know, while you're on the go. And so, you know, what used to take a lot of time for me, because I mean, I get thousands, you know, get tons and tons of email, you know, it's like going through all that takes, you know, a bunch of time, but I can sort through stuff and answer half the emails and be answering and what have you, you know, while I'm moving around New York or, you know, between meetings or something like that. So you don't end up doing as much from the desktop, and more tasks move sort of into that mode. You know, you figure things out on the fly. You know, you're sitting there, you just get used to the idea that, you know, you're sitting there and somebody watching a movie and, you know, you want to, you know, quickly look up an IMDb, you know, what was the name of that star or where have I seen them in before? And, you know, and it's really, you know, changes a lot of the way you think about solving problems when you always have this computing power with you and you always have a big pile of data and, you know, stuff that you're currently working with, and you always are connected to the Internet. And, you know, so the... You know, you have a sort of convergence going on here, and the fact that you've got lots of devices is sort of like having too many remotes in your living room. Or, you know, if you go in your living room, count the number of devices connected to your TV so that you could actually get Netflix on. My MP3 player, you know, the Blu-ray player gets that, and my TiVo gets that, and, you know, so on and so forth. You know, it's just, you know, they're trying to settle into the finished pattern where and at the point of convergence, you know, lots of pieces are trying to get in there. So I think what you'll find is that it'll sort of smooth out. So we like making a phone call. So you don't have to worry about whether it's a cell phone or a desktop phone or voice over IP or whatever. You'll just, or, you know, some sort of interactive chat thing, and just go out and say, hey, oh, hey, I want to call Steve and get him on the phone. And, you know, we'll figure out the actual hardware. And whether I'm calling from a cell phone now or a voice over IP phone or an actual old-fashioned landline or anything else like that, it's pretty, you know, opaque to you on that end. It doesn't really matter. So, you know, similarly, the sort of the idea of having a separate device for all these different things will sort of go away with a lot of your other sort of computing and interacting tasks.
You know, it's fascinating, too. I keep flashing back to other conversations that we've had on the show, particularly good friend of ours, technology maven, Simon Applebaum, who tends to focus on the convergence of technology and entertainment. I've talked a fair amount about him, about this new Google TV venture. I'm wondering about something like that. We've spent a lot of time thinking about the convergence of Internet and TV and of being able to pull up the web on your TV, and now we're starting to see that in its sort of embryonic forms. I'm wondering here from listening to you talk how much that might be going the other way. I'm wondering that as these things tie together, are there better chances now of being able to pull up your TV possibly on one of these type of devices also, and making TV truly mobile?
Well, you absolutely can. If you're a Comcast customer right now, and you use their Xfinity, you know, cable box system, you can get an iPad application, and not only set your DVR to record things from your iPad, but, you know, watch the shows that come into your cable box on your iPad when you're not at home.
Wow.
You know, so it's like, you know, I'm not going to be home in time for, you know, tonight's episode of House. So I can, while I'm on the train on the way up using the iPad application, let's watch, you know, my TV shows when they come on, or once I've recorded. So, I mean, it's really getting, you know, there right now. So similarly, you know, I can do, you know, most of what a home entertainment system does on a computer. I tend to have like a Mac Mini in my living room hooked up to, you know, the big TV in the living room, because I can use the Mac as a, you know, DVD player. I've got lots of ripped movies from, you know, DVDs that I've got, and you know, we could also bring up, you know, anything you want from Netflix to YouTube, anything that runs in a browser, Hulu, you know, just hit full screen and, you know, there you are in the living room. And so you don't really know where this content is coming from. And it doesn't really matter. And what's more, you're going to get to the stage, well, okay, so you're going to have this one repository with all of your multimedia, all of your access to the internet, and all the stuff for the house, and, you know, your TV becomes sort of a peripheral. I mean, it's interesting, the idea with the Google TV, but, and certainly all these other devices that are turning themselves into computers, like, you know, your TiVo or your cable box or whatever. But the idea of, like, pushing the smarts into the TV is just they're trying to reach an audience that hasn't thought of actually putting a computer anywhere near their TV set, or wouldn't buy a special box that actually has a computer in it and attach it to their TV set. So they're trying to sort of get that computing into the household. But I think, it's like, you know, people who you would never have thought of having a smartphone, you know, 4 years ago, you know, wouldn't be caught dead without one and do tons of, you know, do all their Facebooking or whatever from their smartphone or their iPad. You know, so the idea that there should be a, you know, all of them are moving in the direction of sort of, you know, having all their iTunes music, you know, on some computer in their house. So the whole idea of, like, you know, just wiring a TV set into the mix, you know, is going to become sort of a, you know, much more straightforward thing. So I think the Google TV idea is, you know, an excellent core concept, but I'm not sure whether the TV set is going to be the actual host for it. You know, you're going to have things like that you can look things up in, record things, you know, get all sorts of metadata. It's being offered by lots of different services now, and they're all sort of duking it out for when things converge. You don't have a set-top box from the cable company anymore. You know, who's going to be in charge of, you know, what the software works like and so forth. So it's interesting to see lots of players in this, where everyone's trying to envision, you know, what the whole platform is going to look like and how it's going to work. But so I think that's evolving more slowly. But, you know, Apple's doing cool stuff with the Apple TV now, where you can, if I've got a movie on my iPad, I can play it through my Apple TV on the big TV screen in the living room without wiring anything together at all. I actually have the content on my iPad, and I just basically beam it to the Apple TV, which then, you know, runs it out the HDMI cable into the back of my TV set, and, you know, plays the movie, you know, from the data on my iPad. And, you know, it works trivially now, you know, this whole AirPlay thing. And, you know, this is going to be sort of the whole idea. It doesn't really matter where this data is. You just, you know, connect the dots and it'll play. And so that's, you know, really interesting. And the iPad, you know, plays into that, as well as it also sort of democratizes sort of the idea of this, you know, transportable but still, you know, high-quality playback device, and gets people thinking about, you know, new ways to sort of look at the whole idea of interacting with their multimedia and interacting with their, you know, computing environment. You know, and so, you know, it sort of is a intermediate thing to a certain extent, because some of this stuff requires sort of critical mass. You know, requires embracing by, you know, the cable industry, or requires the computer industry to do something, or the or whatever else. And so, you know, getting more and more people doing it, you know, helps push the technological change along as well.
Yeah, this is fascinating, because, you know, the potential of convergence, you know, like I said, I guess I had tend to focus, like a lot of people, on it going through the TV and the more conventional ways we'd been thinking of, rather than it migrating out to the mobiles and going the other way. This is amazing, some of the things that you're informing us about tonight. I referenced previously that there was a blurb on Daily Beast about that today. I clicked through subsequently here. I see that it was a Wall Street Journal article entitled Apple's New iPad in Production. And from what it's talking about here, just some of the cliff notes are that it's supposed to be thinner and lighter than the first model. Camera on the front of the device for features like video conferencing, more memory, more powerful graphics processor. I mean, those last two things I would think would be fairly obvious, because it seems like every generation, those are two of the obvious things to try to upgrade. So as you get blurbs like this coming out now, and I guess it'll be the next couple of months before there's any type of tangible debut of the thing. For somebody like you, Alex, who's so very focused on devices like the iPad, the iPhone, I guess the iPhone would tie into this for the example of this question also. Somebody like you who's so focused on taking these devices and making them better, unlocking the capabilities to improve these things here, at what point in time do you start to focus on this, try to drill down what you can find, learn what you can learn? Is it as far out as this with the release of the new iPad a couple months away? Do you wait till you get a little bit closer, till more details are coming out? When do you start keying on this thing?
Well, I mean, I think, I don't know, 6 months ago.
Oh, okay.
I mean, but at the same time, you know, I sort of, you know, some aspects of like, where we're thinking, you know, technologically and what, you know, what sort of the ideas we're thinking about, there are things that, you know, may not actually see the light of day in general production for, you know, till, you know, iPad 3 or 4 or something like that, but, you know, are sort of coming. And, you know, so what can you, you know, what can you take advantage of, or what can you get, you know, do to prepare, you know, for the fact that, you know, there's going to be, you know, more capacity or more speed, or there's going to be, you know, features available that you hadn't thought of. I mean, you know, okay, so, you know, Apple sort of made the, you know, video telephone call that we were promised, you know, sort of a reality. That'll be even more so with, you know, iPads and being able to, you know, sort of hold up a window that somebody is talking at you. And so that, you know, at, you know, at some point, the whole concept of teleconferencing systems and everything else sort of really goes away. Like, yeah, well, I can teleconference with, you know, this, my phone. You know, what are you talking about? But, you know, they, you know, really sort of makes the whole idea that, that we can have high quality video streams going in two directions without, you know, wiring anything up and over whatever data network you happen to have, you know, starts people thinking about other things that you can do, as you can keep that pipe open all the time, you know, between two endpoints, you know, and, you know, things that work, you know, okay when you have sort of, you know, sometimes you're on your cell phone network, sometimes you have Wi-Fi and what have you, but, you know, what if you have Wi-Fi all the time? You know, what if you have better ways of detecting and communicating with, you know, iPhones and iPads around you? You know, what sorts of things will that, you know, possibly enable? And so from things like that, you know, you get, you know, people coming up with ideas that, you know, seem almost unbelievable but actually work great. There's this great program called World Lens. It is, you know, you have to get somebody to show you this program because, you know, you will absolutely, like, think it's a trick and, you know, and you won't believe your eyes. Basically, the idea is, you know, sort of an augmented reality app, which is basically a situation where you're looking through the camera at the real world, and, you know, the computer, in this case an iPhone, is in the product, actually changes what you're seeing in some way. So what it does, the World Lens, is you buy the Spanish language module. So you're, you know, you're on vacation in, you know, in Mexico or in Barcelona, or you go on to Barcelona for the World Mobile Conference, and you see a sign, you don't know what it says. You just hold up this, the app, and look through the your iPhone through the camera at that sign on the wall, and in real time, it will basically rewrite the text in English. I mean, it will figure out what's the font that's being used, the color of the letters, the background, everything else, and it'll redraw, you know, where it says baño on the wall, it'll say bathroom in English. And, you know, you just, like, look around the phone, like, what the heck? But it's like, this is like a good, you know, computer graphics department, you know, photoshopping reality for you in real time with English translations of everything you point the camera at.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing.
It's amazing. You know, you get the free demo version, you know, puts the letters up backwards, you know, in real time. You can point it at a sign, at a soda bottle, you know, at a book cover, you know, anything that's got written words, and it'll just basically what it'll look like is the words are in English looking through the camera. And it's like, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, just the fact that this works and it works, you know, basically on the phone, you know, is amazing. It's, you know, that, you know, we're able to do this and do the graphics and make the whole thing work in real time on the phone using this processor right now is amazing. You know, I bought a car recently. And the guy that I bought the car from is this guy, is a specializes in buying and selling certain kinds of cars. And we were just sort of talking about, the history reports and things like that you can get. And he had this amazing app, and I wish I could remember what the name of it was, but it's not something that I personally use, but I've got to go get it at some point. But basically what it does is you can look through, it's an augmented reality app, you can look at the VIN number, basically points the camera at the VIN number in the car, and it'll translate that into every option that you had when you bought the car, when it was bought, where it was bought, so on and so forth, and will automatically tie into all the different Blue Book reports and the damage reports and the insurance reports and things like that. And so he can tell in seconds after just looking at the VIN number everything about this car, whether it's ever been in an accident, how many owners it's had, how many miles it's had, if there are any red flags at all about, any aspect of this. And it's just, all available on an iPhone app, and all you have to do is point the camera at the VIN number, it'll automatically recognize that and go off and find all the data for him. He was chuckling about a guy who'd come in and was, suggesting that he turn back the odometer. And he's like, no one can possibly do that anymore because cars exist, as so much data in the system. As long as you know which car it is, the system knows how many miles your car should have on you based on, the last six times it went anywhere and was plugged in. You go get your oil change now. They just plug the car in, and it'll do a health check on things diagnostically. And the insurance, people can get access to a certain amount of that information. And so, it's something that, as simple as, an automobile has, drastically changed its whole interaction with your life, because you have access to this data all the time, anywhere.
Well, some of these apps are just truly unbelievable, whether it be the car one or, as you say, translating the signs in real time. I mean, my mind fairly reels when I hear these things, and I'm sure that's the same thing for our audience tonight when they're hearing you talk about it. I'll come back in a second here to some of these apps. Something I'd like to ask you about before I do, I'm flashing back to 2 weeks ago on the show here. We had on Liz Klayman from Fox Business. She was on the verge of this new iPad-only daily newspaper that News Corp is putting out, and she was pretty bullish on the prospects of that and of that maybe turning around the fortunes of the news industry, which has really been battered by the dying form of newspapers these days, and thinking that this might be a new frontier for monetizing. What thoughts do you have, if any, on the prospect of news ventures and maybe some other ones that haven't been doing so well in a traditional sense, being able to jump onto the iPad and thinking that people may pay a little bit for the convenience of being able to get some extras and some goodies like this in the form of, for example, that iPad-only newspaper?
Yeah, I mean, the Daily is certainly a very interesting effort, and I think, it's very good, and it does point in the direction that things are going. I mean, the traditional, print news press and, basically botched the whole idea of going to the web and, continuing to, enjoy a certain level of monetization of the data that they were doing, of the articles they were writing and what have you. I mean, the whole, it didn't quite work out right, and they hadn't thought this stuff through. And everything that's been done so far for the iPhone, for the iPad, has been sort of a whole series of experiments as they're trying to get this one, right. And I think, it's a tough question because, I mean, you look at some of the magazine apps for the for the iPad, and they require a complete, enormous, multimedia production, in order to create the content that goes there, and it's unrelated to, is not directly equivalent to their to the same edition of their magazine or the same data coming out in other forms. And it, I think what they really want, because they're looking at syndicating this information, news stories, photographs, what have you. They want to be able to more or less produce a story and have it be used widely, and so having a completely dedicated to the iPad production team, it's certainly going to be an interesting thing that the Daily is trying to do. But all of these companies need to find, are looking for ways in which they can sell what they've got. But at the same time, with so much easy Google access to news and, reporting, it's really hard to come up with, you know, what it is that you're actually paying for. I mean, there's no question that, you know, newspapers have, you know, editorial bent. They have a, they are in a position to, you know, do sort of long form news that doesn't really play out as well, you know, in, you know, in mobile and electronic markets. But at the same time, you know, they have an enormous database of, you know, past articles. They have a tremendous amount of information, and there's a lot of stuff that they do, you know, particularly well, and they need to find ways to capitalize on that. You know, I think, you know, the Daily is a nice thing for the iPad, but there's still, it's still an experiment, because I think, you know, there's, among other things, you know, it's sort of like a, you know, come home and read the newspaper at the end of the day kind of, read the, you know, magazine at the end of the day kind of thing. It takes a little too long to load. There's no way to sort of have it be automatically charged up with today's edition. So it's not like the newspaper that you grabbed off the porch on your way out the door and that, you know, you could read it on the subway or the bus on your way into work. And, you know, until we sort of get to the point where we, you know, we can replace that. And we, you know, I mean, because I could use Mobile Safari on my iPhone and be reading the New York Times in a web browser, you know, on my way into work. But, you know, I would have to wait to synchronize the entire daily issue for today before I could start reading any articles. So, you know, there's some aspects of it that are still a little bit, it's their first rollout. Everybody is doing an experiment to try and figure out, you know, what's the best way to sort of interact with people and have how people will consume sort of digital media and what kinds of things people are willing to pay for. There's certain things that people are willing to pay for that, you know, were initially hard to grasp. I mean, I think, you know, when we personally, from having done the digital books thing, I was rather, you know, amazed to find that, you know, what we were really looking at was trying to define iTunes, but for books. You know, you have this whole, you know, yeah, you have a library of books. You put some on your mobile device to go on vacation with, and you've got 1,000 books to go read on your vacation. And you know, you can add some while you're going around, and you know, do various things, you know, with these books while you're roaming around. And you end up having a lot of the same sort of problems and solutions that came out of iTunes. So you want to be able to suggest new books to people. We had Barnes & Noble, we had loanings. So you could loan people books. Figuring out sort of interaction model with what people will pay for. Now, what they pay for is be able to have one bookshelf and have, you know, a good tool that will help them sort of organize this and suggest new stuff, make it easy for them to actually go about reading books without distracting them from it. So I think with news, you know, you have to find a way, you know, something that really, you know, fits sort of hand in glove with people's usage patterns, and, you know, and the stuff that people will pay for is that better organization, better tools to work with it, more convenience. I mean, you know, we Barnes & Noble, you know, and Apple are sort of at loggerheads over subscriptions, but, you know, they have for the Kindle, I mean, for the Nook, you know, and Amazon similarly for the Kindle has newspapers and magazines on their dedicated devices, and they can have those updated overnight. So you can just grab your Kindle on your way out the door, or your Nook on your way out the door, and there's the New York Times, you know, to read today's edition, just like you got it off your doorstep. People will pay for the convenience. You know, they read a couple of articles and they feel, you know, oh, I'm in a bad mood, I want to be cheered up, and then they, like, you know, flip over to, you know, some funny book that they're reading and read, you know, a chapter of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on their way into work, and, you know, arrive chuckling. And the convenience of having them both in the same form factor, in the same library, able to do the same kinds of things with them, you know, is something that I think people are, you know, are comfortable paying for. But, you know, trying to sort of lock up the content or get them to pay for stuff that, you know, they could equivalently get for free someplace, you know, else, you know, is a harder sell. And so I think the, you know, the newspapers and magazines are still trying to figure out what it is that they do so well that people will pay for it, you know, above and beyond simply, you know, providing the content. And, you know, and that's an interesting question. And, you know, solving this question will become increasingly interesting as people have more options for display, for carrying things around, more connected more of the time. And, you know, can see, you know, richer and richer media in that content that's delivered to them. But they'll expect things to be up to date more, to be more useful or interactive, and more tied into everything else. And, you know, so it's, you know, trying to come up with something that you can sell that people will buy, as everything is in flux with the platform and connectivity and ways to pay for things and so forth. Certainly an interesting challenge for the media companies, because they're trying to hit a moving, very, very moving target with people who are whose concepts and ways in which they use this stuff is still very much evolving as the capabilities emerge.
Well,
it's also clear though that there are people who are like out front, as things converge, are the ones who will get to write the user guides, who will get to define the standards, who will get to participate. I think that's one of the reasons why Apple and Rupert Murdoch and Google and other big media companies and publishing companies are all sort of fighting to be at the table while this is being hashed out, is because they don't want to be left out of the ultimately emerging standards and common way to do things.
Right, and I agree with you, and I would never bet against Uncle Rupert, but I'll tell you what, I think the challenge is going to be on for them to differentiate themselves clearly. Alex, we're up against the top of the hour break here, but we always love to give our guests a chance to plug, so whether it be the iPhone Boot Camp, anything else that you've got going on with CodeFab, talk about that, put it out there for what it is that you do that really differentiates yourself on this part of the spectrum here, and if need be, where anybody can, where's the best place to go, I should say, I guess, for anybody to find information or contact information for you?
Absolutely. CodeFab's, primarily is a, iPhone, iOS, consulting firm, and we have some really the top people. We've been doing some really great projects from Barnes & Noble to Comcast to, SunGuard and various other people that we've done work with, and Apple, and, and so we're always interested in good sort of enterprise-scale projects. You can always track me down at CodeFab.com, which has is our website, has all the contact information, and the more I work at it, the more galleries of stuff that we've done and interesting stuff on my blog is up there. We've got an iPhone or iOS dev camp that we're looking to put together in approximately April. We did a big dev camp for when the iPad came out last fall, and it was a huge success. Looking at repeating it this spring and get a whole bunch of developers together for a weekend-long hackathon. So stay tuned for details about the New York iOS dev camp that we're going to put together. And, check out the Barnes & Noble e-reader. I think we're really proud of what we did there and really proud of the kids' Nook app, which is it was an amazing effort from everybody involved in that. We even had a book in there at launch by Barack Obama. It was like, damn, doesn't this guy have stuff to do? What does he have time to write children's book? But nonetheless, that was a cool thing to get at the last minute for the launch of the Kids Nook. And that's always also fun. We already spent a bunch of time trying to figure out, how to build user interfaces for people who are like driving or in line at Starbucks to use. And, now we got to go back and look at the whole concept of digital reading and, make it work for a small child. So it's like a children's iPod for books. So it was, all the Curious George and Amelia Bedelia and all sorts of things that are familiar to all of us, no matter what our age is. And it was great to see those come to life on the iPad.
All right. Well, we've learned a lot, as always, from you, Alex. It's always a pleasure to have you on, sir. We look forward to doing it again. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Look forward to seeing you guys again. Have a good one.
Thanks, Alex. We'll do it again soon. Excellent. Alex Cohn, everybody, iPad and iPhone expert here, and you can find his work at CodeFab, and that is twitter.com/CodeFab is one place to find it here. Also, iPhoneBootCampNYC.com.